Beyond Barbarossa, Episode 72, Another Crushing Blow, Odessa and Crimea. Welcome to Beyond Barbarossa, the first English language podcast in the world to focus on the Eastern Front of World War II. To make sure you don't miss an episode, please click that follow button on your podcast app, and you can get an email notification of every new episode. Just go to feedspot.com and add Beyond Barbarossa to your preferences. Supporters get early ad-free access to all episodes of Beyond Barbarossa, plus special members-only bonus episodes. To become a supporter, go to patreon.com/beyondbarbarossa. Hello, I'm Scott Burry, podcasting from the Redbeard Studio on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabeg Algonquin people, also called Ottawa, Canada. And I'm joined in the studio today by my stalwart assistant, Ragnar the Magnificent. The last narrative episode of Beyond Barbarossa, that is where I was describing the progress of the war on the Eastern Front, was three episodes ago. And it introduced Stalin's 10 crushing blows that happened in 1944. The first was the lifting of the siege of Leningrad and pushing the German army group north to the Estonian border, thus liberating also Novgorod, if we can call reoccupation by the Red Army liberation. The next crushing blow was the so-called liberation of right bank Ukraine, according to Stalin. Most people in the West know it as the Dnipro-Carpathian Offensive, which cleared Axis forces out of northwestern Ukraine, and we look at that in episode 69. According to Evan Maudsley, author of Thunder in the East, the Nazi-Soviet War 1941 to 1945, quote, rapid movement on this scale was something that had happened only once before in the Second World War on the Russian front, a continuous advance. The German armies committed to Operation Barbarossa rolled east from June to November 1941. The Red Army did something very similar, but for an even longer period, from August 1943 to April 1944. In 1944, the situation is the opposite, the mirror image of 1941. After the battles of Stalingrad and Kursk, rapid movement across the Ukraine and then over the Dnipro River to the Carpathians and the Romanian border. And that's where we left off the narrative before the interviews of the past two episodes. It introduced Stalin's broad front strategy, that is, attack everywhere all along the line continually until the enemy breaks somewhere, and then exploit that break as fast and as hard as you can. This strategy was only possible because of the USSR's massive resources of people, equipment, and materiel largely supplied through the Lend-Lease program. By mid-March 1944, the Red Army had driven the Wehrmacht almost completely out of Ukraine. This would bring them to an area in southwestern Ukraine where there are consecutive major European rivers, the Bug or Bug, the Dniester, and the Prut. That progress is what we're going to cover today. The third crushing blow, Odessa and Crimea. It was Stalin who put those two operations together into one crushing blow. They usually are described as separate operations, and in many ways they were, but they were intertwined. They did influence one another. And maybe Stalin thought that 11 crushing blows didn't sound as good as 10 crushing blows. I don't know. Maybe it sounds better in Russian. So what we're going to talk about is the Odessa Offensive and the Crimean Offensive. One quick note, we're using the Ukrainian spelling of Odessa because it is a Ukrainian city. One S. Two S's is the Russian spelling. So what I'm going to do to illustrate the individual yet connected nature of these two operations in one crushing blow, I'm going to summarize the highlights in chronological order, which means sometimes one point will be about the Odessa offensive and the next one will be about the Crimean offensive. And then once I've covered that, we're going to dive deep into each operation one at a time for all the gory details. On 26 March 1944, the 3rd Ukrainian Front, commanded by Rodion Malinovsky, and remember, a front is a group of armies, launched an offensive from its bridgeheads on the western or right bank of the southern Bug River toward the Romanian border, or what had been the Romanian border before the war in the east started in 1941. Now, to understand this, we have to back up a little to the summer of 1943. After defeat at Stalingrad and the retreat from the Kuban and Caucasus areas, the Germans held on to a position on the Taman Peninsula, so that's on the eastern side of the Sea of Azov and the Black Sea. The Taman Peninsula is a finger of land that reaches west toward Crimea. It's partly what separates the Sea of Azov from the Black Sea. See the map on the webpage for this episode. In September 1943, the Red Army's North Caucasus Front, commanded by Ivan Petrov, recaptured the Black Sea port of Novorossiysk, which is just south of the Taman Peninsula. It's on the eastern coast of the Black Sea. The remaining Axis forces on the Taman Peninsula, the German 17th Army under General Erwin Janicka, along with the Romanian Mountain Corps, still held the Kuban bridgehead at the tip of the Taman Peninsula until October 1943. That's when they withdrew across the Kerch Strait onto eastern Crimea, including the city of Kerch. In November 1943, the Soviet Black Sea Fleet, along with the Azov Flotilla, transported the 18th and 56th Armies of the Southern Front, soon to be renamed the 4th Ukrainian Front, across the Kerch Strait. A rifle division and a naval infantry battalion landed at a place called Eltingen on 1st November 1943. Then, 2 days later, another 4,400 men of the 56th Red Army landed at another bridgehead on the north side of Kerch, a place called Yenikale. Supported by massed artillery support from across the strait, they pushed the Germans and Romanians back and brought in another 27,700 troops. The Germans set up a naval blockade supported by the Luftwaffe in an attempt to prevent the bridgehead from getting any bigger or to drive it out, but they weren't able to do that. So in December, Romanian cavalry and mountain troops counterattacked, recaptured the bridgehead of Eltingen, that's the initial southern one, took 1,570 prisoners, and captured 38 tanks and 25 anti-tank guns. This operation left 1,200 Red Army soldiers and sailors dead, compared to 886 Romanians. During this battle, around 800 Red Army troops broke out and tried to reach the northern beachhead at Yenikale, and only a few of them managed to make it. The Red Army brought in more troops to Yenikale. By early December, they had over 75,000 men, 582 guns, 128 tanks, and more equipment on this one bridgehead. This would become the starting point for a powerful operation in 1944. But let's not get ahead of the story. So, on Christmas Eve 1943, the Red Army's 3rd Ukrainian Front, under Rodion Malinovsky, launched the Dnipro-Carpathian Offensive in southern Ukraine. It broke through the German defensive Wotan Line at Kherson which is at the mouth of the Dnieper River. This movement blocked the Perekop Isthmus, the entrance to the Crimean Peninsula. Thus, it isolated and trapped the German 17th Army and the Romanian Mountain Corps on the peninsula. Hitler demanded that the Crimea be held at all costs, in opposition to most of the generals who thought it would be a better idea to withdraw to evacuate Crimea by sea. According to most historians, Hitler believed that the Soviets would be able to use Crimea as an airbase from which to bomb the Ploiesti oil fields in Romania. He also felt that holding Crimea was important politically to keep Turkey neutral. Both of these ideas turned out to be, well, not false, but immaterial, because the Americans were already bombing the Ploiesti airfields from their bases in Italy, and Turkey eventually supported the Allies anyway. Still, Hitler sent 4 divisions of reinforcements to Crimea, which meant they were not available for more active parts of the front, such as where Erich von Manstein, then commander of Army Group South, needed them to hold back Zhukov's 1st Ukrainian Front in northwestern Ukraine. On 8th March, Hitler issued Order No. 11 on fortified places, which basically meant no retreat, no surrender, fight to the death in this list of cities and other areas. Crimea was one of these fortified places. To quote Evan Maudsley again, Hitler's conduct was a symptom of the problem rather than the cause. The fact was that the Wehrmacht was desperately overstretched. It became more overstretched by the month as Soviet strength built up and the German army and the Luftwaffe faced increased attacks in the west. End quote. Now we have to turn briefly to the political side of the war. Hungary's alliance with Hitler's Germany had been fraught from the beginning. The head of state, effectively Regent Miloš Horthy, had a tense relationship with the Führer and resisted, to a certain extent, some of the Nazis' strongest, worst anti-Semitic policies. Still, Hungary became a member of the Axis in 1941, declared war on the USSR, and later on the US. Hungarian troops took part in Operation Barbarossa and fought, and lost heavily, in the attempt to take Stalingrad. By 1944, the Hungarians realized the Axis was losing the war, just like everybody else. Prime Minister Miklos Kale secretly reached out to the Western Allies for a separate peace for Hungary, even possibly switching sides. Germany, Hitler, caught wind of this, and on 19th March, launched Operation Margareta. German troops occupied Hungary, and Hungarian armed forces came under German direct control. Now, Hungary wasn't the only country at this time exploring peace terms. Finland had been fighting the continuation war since June 1941, an attempt to regain the territory it had lost in the Winter War of 1940. For more background on this, Patreon supporters can listen to the Winter War series I did 2 years ago. Anyway, once the Soviets crushed the German 6th Army at Stalingrad in 1943, Finland began looking for a way to get out of the war. There were intermittent peace negotiations in 1943, and Finnish and Soviet diplomats had met again on 16 February 1944. The terms, though, of the peace agreement reached at that negotiation were rejected by the Finns on 21st March 1944. Now we go back to the military. On 30th March, Hitler fired Field Marshals Erich von Manstein, commander of Army Group South, and Paul von Kleist, commander of Army Group A, which at that point was operating along the south coast of Ukraine as well as in Crimea. So 17th Army was part of Army Group A. Field Marshal Walter Model took over Manstein's command, while Army Group A came under the command of Ferdinand Schorner, a fanatical Nazi mentioned 2 episodes ago by my guest and fellow podcaster David Sumner of Europe at War. Check out his podcast after you finish this. It's really good. Now let's get into the broad strokes of this third crushing blow. 28 March 1944. After breaking out of bridgeheads over the southern Bug River, the 3rd Ukrainian Front captured the city of Mykolaiv, then called Nikolaev in Russian. Their goal? To liberate the Black Sea coast of Ukraine, recapture Odessa, and reach the pre-war Romanian border. The German 6th Army retreated, and partly because of the Berezina or Rasputitsa, the season of no roads due to deep springtime mud, lost or abandoned a great number of tanks, armored vehicles, trucks, and other heavy equipment. On 4th April, the Red Army's Cavalry Mechanized Group, under Lieutenant General Isa Pliev, comprising the 4th Guards Cavalry Corps and the 4th Guards Mechanized Corps, captured the Raslnaya railway station northwest of Odessa, splitting the German 6th Army in two and cutting the rail line to the occupiers in Odessa. On 8th April, the Red Army began its assault on Crimea. The 4th Ukrainian Front attacked down the Perekop Isthmus southward into the peninsula, while the coastal army attacked from its beachheads around Kerch. So back to the north. On 9th April, the Red Army reached the outskirts of Odessa. The next day, 10th April, was eventful. As the 4th Ukrainian Front broke through the German lines across the Perekop Isthmus, the 3rd Ukrainian Front captured Odessa. German and Romanian units evacuated the great port city by sea. Over the next 4 days, the Red Army pushed another 150 kilometers or 90 miles to the Romanian border. 90 miles in 4 days. Think about that. They took the city of Tiraspol, now in Moldova, on the way. Meanwhile, the coastal army on the eastern peninsula of Crimea captured the city of Kerch on the 11th of April. The German 17th Army, including the Romanian Corps there, decided to evacuate by sea from Sevastopol. By 14 April, the Red Army had reached the Dniester River, the western boundary of Ukraine, and in Crimea, breached the German Gneisenau defensive line. On 15th April, the Romanian Navy began evacuations from Sevastopol. The Red Army reached the outskirts of the city by the end of the month, which the Germans thought to turn into a fortress. On 7th May, the Red Army began its final assault on Sevastopol, capturing it on 10th May. The remaining Axis forces pulled back to Cape Chersonis, the westernmost point of the peninsula, the same spot the Red Army had evacuated from 2 years earlier. The last German and Romanian troops evacuated on 12th May, but left behind 21,000 who would be POWs. Those are the broad strokes. Now it's almost time to get into the details of this third crushing blow. But before that, let's see what else is happening in the war. March 22, 1944. Japanese forces cross the border into India at Imphal on the Burmese border. March 24. British Major General Ord Wingate, creator of the Chindit penetration forces that fought the Japanese in Burma, is killed in a plane crash. That same day, in Italy, German forces massacre more than 200 members of the Italian resistance in response to a bomb blast that killed German troops. April 3, the Western Allies bomb Budapest, Hungary, and Bucharest, Romania. April 4, Charles de Gaulle takes command of all Free French forces. April 5, the U.S. Air Force bombs the Ploiesti oil fields in Romania. They follow that up with another air raid 10 days later. April 22, U.S. troops land in New Guinea to cut off Japanese forces. May 8, the Western Allies decide on June 5th as D-Day for Operation Overlord. May 11, the Fourth Battle of Monte Cassino in Italy begins, led by the 2nd Polish Corps. May 12, Chinese forces invade northern Burma behind the Japanese units pushing into India. Now that the stage is set and the players have taken their places, before the action begins, let's take a brief pause to refill our coffees. Hi, Scott here. I hope you're enjoying this episode and that you get a lot out of the whole podcast. Beyond Barbarossa is still, as far as I can tell, the only English language podcast in the world that focuses on the Eastern Front of World War II. If you do like it and you want to help me keep it going, please give it a rating or a review on Apple, Google, Amazon, Podbean, or whatever podcasting platform you listen to it on. That helps let other people know about it. Patreon's another way you can support the podcast, my research, and podcasting expenses. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/beyondbarbarossa and sign up at whatever level of support you choose. Patreon supporters get early, ad-free access to new episodes, as well as exclusive bonus episodes on topics like the Winter War between the USSR and Finland, and the pre-Barbarossa invasion of Poland by Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union in 1939. Check it out, won't you? Just go to patreon.com/beyondbarbarossa. Thanks.
Did you know that the cappuccino was invented by a Ukrainian? Or that many first names, like Philip and Agatha, were brought to Western Europe by Ukrainian princesses? Or that a Ukrainian was the first female given the rank of officer in a modern army? Well, if you didn't, and even if you did, you can learn more about my podcast, Wandering the Edge, a podcast about Ukrainian history with a spot of travel, and all in English. And if you like Beyond Barbarossa as much as I do, because, well, it makes my life a whole lot easier since I don't have to do any episodes deep diving into the Eastern Front of the Second World War, please take a listen to Wandering the Edge for a deep dive into Ukrainian history, culture, and traditions. Find out more on wanderingtheedge.net. And now, let's get back to Scott exploring and explaining the Eastern Front of the Second World War.
Thanks for coming back to part two. Now that you have an idea of the plot, let's get into the details of Stalin's third crushing blow of 1944. We'll start with the Odessa Offensive. As I mentioned, this was basically a continuation of the Dnipro-Carpathian strategic offensive that began the year before. In early March, Rodion Malinovsky's 3rd Ukrainian Front was given the task of destroying the German 6th Army and Romanian 3rd Army of Manstein's Army Group South. I'll take a moment to point out that this is not the same 6th Army that fought in Stalingrad a year previous. This was a new group of forces drawn together from other units as well as new recruits. It was nowhere near as strong as the huge army that General Paulus had led across the steppe to Stalingrad in 1942. In early March 1944, the 3rd Ukrainian Front had pushed the Germans back to the southern Bug or Buch River, established some bridgeheads on the western side or right bank. Their next goal was to clear the Axis out of the land between the Buch and the Dniester. The 3rd Ukrainian Front included the Red 6th, 57th, 37th, and 46th Armies, the 8th Guards Army, the 23rd Tank Corps, and the Cavalry Mechanized Group, sometimes called the Horse and Mechanized Group. It was under the command of General Lieutenant Isa Pliev. This comprised the 4th Guards Cavalry Corps and the 4th Guards Mechanized Corps. Still riding on horses, but they've got another group with trucks and armored cars and so on. The 17th Air Army, comprising 2 aviation corps, provided defense against the Luftwaffe. Theoretically, anyway. We'll get into that. In total, on 28th March, there were 470,000 troops, 12,678 guns and mortars, 435 tanks and self-propelled guns, and 436 combat aircraft. Their opposition was the German 6th Army. As I mentioned, nowhere near that strength. At this point, it comprised 188,551 men, plus 38,000 troops of the Romanian 3rd Army and 5,500 from the Slovak 1st Mobile Infantry Division. This 2-to-1 ratio of attacker to defender may be deceiving. The ground the 3rd Ukrainian Front was sent to recapture is flat, often swampy, broken by many streams and lakes. Take a look at Map 3 on the webpage to get an idea of the water obstacles on this area that they're supposed to deploy into. The 5th Shock Army, part of that 3rd Ukrainian Front, moved along the coast of the Black Sea, driving the German 6th Army ahead of it. This was the point where Hitler fired the commander of the 6th Army and replaced him with that fanatical Nazi Ferdinand Schörner. From 80 to 120 kilometers, or 50 to 75 miles farther north along the Bug River, were the rest of the 3rd Ukrainian Front: the 37th Army, the 8th Guards Army, and the Red 6th Army. And also up there was the Horse and Mechanized Group or Cavalry Mechanized Group under Pliev. They started out about 50 miles or 80 kilometers north of the coast. Now, the initial plan was that the 8th Guards Army would break through the German defenses on the right bank of the Bug, moving southwest, while the 37th and 57th Armies on the 8th Guards right side would push more directly west and northwest. The Cavalry Mechanized Group would then exploit the breakthrough and move toward Odessa. The full offensive began, depending on the source, on the 27th or 28th of March. The 3rd Ukrainian Front, as described, burst out of their bridgeheads on the right bank and penetrated, depending on where they were, from 4 to 25 kilometers that day. They completed the capture of Mykolaiv and drove the 6th Army back. To quote from Prit Butar's The Reckoning, "Over the next few days, clashes continued in the area to the east of Mykolaiv as various German units, ranging from small groups of soldiers to division-sized battle groups, tried to slip through to the west. While many were intercepted and scattered or destroyed by the Red Army, other groups succeeded in reaching the southern Bug. Inevitably, almost all heavy equipment was lost during the retreat, and all of the German divisions involved in the battle took heavy losses. The near-complete destruction of 16th Panzered Grenadier Division resulted in its remnants being dispatched to France." End quote. The 8th Guards Army made slow progress, but the 57th and 37th had more success. This resulted in the Horse and Mechanized Group being able to advance more to the north, toward the town of Mostova, before turning south to Berezivka. The trouble was, as I mentioned, and as you can see in Map 3, there are a lot of rivers in that area. And also there's a lot of swampy, low ground, especially the farther south you get. So it's not great for rapid movement of horses or tanks, not to mention that this is still the season of no roads, Berezina, or Rasputitsa. Even so, the Cavalry Mechanized Group made remarkably fast progress, as you can see on the map, which meant they got the most harassment from the Luftwaffe. Again, quoting from Prit Butar, "Pliev's Horse and Mechanized Group continued to receive the attention of German aircraft, operating at what seemed greater levels of activity. As they fell back, the Germans benefited from shorter supply lines, whereas Soviet aircraft were now operating at longer range. The Soviet squadrons that had been able to relocate to improvised airstrips nearer the front line were hamstrung by the same supply difficulties as those faced by the ground troops. Pliev complained that had he had better air cover, his group would have achieved its objectives far more quickly." End quote. Along the southern edge of the Black Sea, the 1st Guards and 295th Rifle Division, along with a naval infantry group, took the town of Ochakiv at the mouth of the next river, the Tilihul, on 30th March. In Russian, that's Tilihul, so you might see it called the Tilihul River, depending on what books you're reading. Luftwaffe attacks inflicted heavy losses, including the commander of the 4th Guards Mechanized Corps. Even so, this group managed to cross the Tilihul River by 1st April. So now we have to zip 50 miles north again. Pliev's group crossed the Veliky Kyolnik River, which is the big Kyolnik River, and yes, there is a little Kyolnik River, near the town of Kotovskoye on 1st April. A regiment from the German 3rd Mountain Division tried to block them to enable the rest of the 6th Army to escape, but this unit was too weak. It was called a division, but at this point it was no larger than a single battalion. Pliev's group easily brushed them off and captured an officer who told them, quote, "In some areas there is terrible confusion. Panic reigns. Everything is mixed up. Many commanders, overwhelmed by fear, gave orders to destroy gasoline, food, and ammunition stocks. For example, the commander of the supply company, Lieutenant Lax, destroyed everything, setting it all ablaze. His men had already fled." End quote. As you can see on the map, the Cavalry Mechanized Group continued southwest, reaching Rozdilna on 3rd April. That was when the weather got cold again, as it did here in Ottawa the same day 81 years later. That's amazing. Quote, "A strong wind brought thick snow, blowing into our faces and blinding us. The Cossacks dismounted. They walked sideways, leaning forward, hardly able to move against the pressure of the wind and snow. They continued on foot, saving the strength of their horses for the attack on Rozdilna. We were using the last reserves of physical strength and willpower. Tanks, self-propelled guns, and other vehicles tried to struggle forward on impossible roads. They were pulled or pushed, timber boards and brushwood placed under their wheels and tracks, anything that could possibly be used, including padded jackets and overcoats. People were so extremely tired that their senses became indifferent to danger. End quote. Not only the Soviets were confused, so were the Axis troops. Around midnight, a Romanian cavalry column of 50 to 60 vehicles and several hundred men on horse joined the Soviet 127th Cavalry Regiment. The Soviet commander, Lieutenant Colonel Zabarin, realized what was going on and attacked the Romanians. Quote, "In every movement, every maneuver, the men looked so tired they might drop and fall asleep. But despite their tiredness, they stubbornly pressed home the attack. On the eastern end of the village, the Cossacks and the tankers captured seven 210mm guns, dozens of vehicles with various military equipment, a large herd of cattle, and other loot." End quote. When Pliev's group took Rozdilna, they captured the train station, cutting off the 6th Army's supply lines. Then a train arrived from Odessa with Germans and Romanians trying to withdraw. They became prisoners. So as you can see, the cavalry mechanized group has described a wide hooking motion to come up to Odessa from the west. Meanwhile, the 8th Guards and 6th Armies were coming toward the city from the north as the 5th Guards Army continued its swampy drive from the east. Next, the 9th Cavalry Division took the town of Ovidiopol, which is on the east side of the Dniester's large estuary and was the site of Odessa's water supply. Fortunately, the Red Army got there before the Germans could blow it up. By 6th April, the Soviets took Bilyayivka. Now, all the way, Pliev's army group had been harassed by the Luftwaffe, which bombed and strafed almost unopposed. Here's another quote from Pritbitar's The Reckoning. General Tolstikov said, "Due to the unsuitability of airfields and extremely bad weather conditions, our fighters could not reliably cover Pliev's mobile group. We concentrated on protecting the rear area units of the mobile group." Although he doesn't explicitly make the point, Pliev's irritation about the manner in which the same weather conditions didn't appear to hinder the Luftwaffe is clear. End quote. Pliev continued to complain about the lack of air support, but he was somewhat mollified by being awarded the Hero of the Soviet Union, USSR's highest military honor. So here we are in early April. Odessa is almost in sight. A cavalry charge gave them the village of Dalnik. What followed was intense, confusing fighting as some German and Romanian units fought to keep the Soviets out of the city, while others fought to escape to the west. Pliev himself wrote this description of the fighting. Quote, "A great tide of Kuban Cossacks crossed the railway and rushed to the nearby woodland. Standing in my jeep, I saw the battle banner of 34th Guards Regiment fluttering in the wind. My eye was caught by a Sherman tank, on the right side of which sat the commander of the tank regiment in a black leather jacket with epaulettes and a Cuban hat pulled low over his eyes. Despite the roar of engines, the constant rumble of thousands of hoofs, the thundering hurrah of the soldiers, the rifle fire and machine gun bursts, every enemy gunshot was clearly heard. At first, the German fire was intense. A direct hit from an anti-tank shell blew off the turret of the Sherman tank on which the new regiment commander had been sitting. Miraculously, his body remained, leaning on its side. But above the leather epaulettes, there was no head with a hat pulled over his eyes. Over there, the Cossack Kazachin fell off his horse. I looked around for a moment. He jumped up and was immediately scooped up by one of his comrades who slowed and swung up in front of him. The horse of Lieutenant Colonel Garaskin fell as if stumbling. It managed to stay on its feet and ran on, limping heavily on its injured leg. I saw Lieutenant Colonel Garaskin slowly slip from the saddle, clinging to the horse's mane. Senior Lieutenant Kuv, the commander of 4th Squadron, jumped up to him. In a letter he later wrote about this, quote, "I rushed up to him. He was covered in blood. A bullet had pierced his chest, another had passed through the flesh of his chin. We carried the regiment commander to the first house on the outskirts of Odessa. End quote. Bullets howled their evil song of death. They were accompanied by shell explosions. For a moment, the tide of horses and tanks was mingled with masses of confused enemy soldiers, and the field was covered with Nazi corpses. This was the German division's rear guard regiment. Then we burst into the streets of Odessa. The 30th Cavalry Division was particularly successful. Its blow fell on the main forces of the withdrawing German division, forcing their surrender. End quote. Meanwhile, the 8th Guards and 6th Armies were coming in from the north, and the 5th Shark Army was finally approaching from the east, along the coast. They entered Odessa in the evening of 9th April. As artillery attacked from two sides, the cavalry from the west and the Red Air Force finally making itself felt from the air, local partisans began attacking as well, preventing the Germans from destroying critical infrastructure. Some of the remaining units of the German 6th Army and Romanian 3rd Army managed to retreat across the Dniester, chased by the cavalry mechanized group. Others evacuated by sea. The Red Army completed its recapture of this port on 10th April 1944. 2 days later, the Red Army captured bridgeheads over the Dniester at Tiraspol, now in Moldova. But that's a story for another episode. This episode is brought to you by the Eastern Front Trilogy, the true story of a Canadian man, Maurice Bury, drafted into the Soviet Red Army in 1941, just in time to be thrown between the jaws of the USSR and Nazi Germany at the launch of the greatest land invasion in history, the monstrous war called Operation Barbarossa. It comes in three volumes, Army of Worn Souls, Under the Nazi Heel, and Walking Out of War. The Eastern Front Trilogy is the story of the largest and deadliest side of the Second World War, seen through the eyes of a man who was there from the earliest days in 1941, through Germany's grinding occupation of Ukraine, and finally to the savage end of the war in Berlin. You can find three individual volumes as ebooks exclusively on Amazon, or purchase the three-volume complete paperback on any online book retailer, or at your local bookstore. To learn more about the Eastern Front Trilogy, visit scottburyauthor.com. Now, let's turn our attention to Crimea. On 8th April 1944, just a day before the Red Army entered Odessa, a two-pronged operation began to retake the peninsula, coordinated by Alexander Vasilevsky, chief of the Soviet General Staff. From the north, two armies of the 4th Ukrainian Front, formerly the Southern Front, attacked the Perekhov Isthmus, while the Independent Coastal Army, now commanded by Andrei Yeremenko of the Battle of Stalingrad, attacked from their precarious hold on the eastern Kerch Peninsula. The Axis forces remaining in Crimea had been in a dicey situation for months. This now comprised seven Romanian divisions plus five German divisions, four of them newly arrived. Remember, I said that Hitler sent four divisions that were sorely needed elsewhere on the Eastern Front into Crimea in this futile attempt to hold the peninsula at all costs. This force now on Crimea numbered some 200,000 men on paper, but there weren't that many. A lot of the divisions were down to half strength or less. What's worse, they had been cut off by land supply since Christmas Eve, when the 4th Ukrainian Front swept across the mouth of the Dnipro River. The Germans and the Romanians had to supply their occupation by sea, mostly through Sevastopol. To retake the peninsula, the Soviets brought 31 rifle divisions, a tank corps, and 1,250 aircraft, in total 470,000 personnel. And in 1944, this immense force, nearly a half million men and women, was far better equipped and supplied than the erstwhile defenders had been 2 years earlier, when Manstey's 11th Army had taken Sevastopol after an eight-month campaign. On 10th April, the 2nd Guards Army and 51st Army broke through the Axis lines across the Perekop land bridge. The Soviet forces moved relatively quickly southward, even though this is notoriously challenging terrain. The isthmus itself is quite narrow and easily defended. The next day, the coastal army captured the city of Kerch in the eastern extremity of the peninsula. The Germans knew this spelled the end of their occupation and began evacuating despite Hitler's orders. Romanian ships began evacuating Axis troops to Constanta, Romania. The first phase of the evacuation, by the 25th of April, took out 63,000 troops. By the time it was over, more than 113,000 Axis troops escaped, without the loss of a single Romanian naval ship, but damage to some German vessels. The Axis, on the other hand, sank a Soviet submarine and two motor torpedo boats. On 13th April, the Red Army reached Simferopol in the middle of Crimea. See map 4. Now, at Simferopol, or just beyond it, was the Gneisenau defensive line. It described a rough semicircle of defenses centered on Sevastopol, curving from Yevpatoria or Eupatoria on the map and around Simferopol to the port of Alushta on the southeast coast. Here, at this point, at getting past the Gneisenau line, the Red Army paused for 2 weeks, much to the anger of the Soviet High Command, the Stavka. On 16th April, the Axis were retreating into Sevastopol, withdrawing all their forces. The problem for that was that the Germans had not repaired the defenses they had destroyed 2 years earlier. And also, these forces just were not as strong as they had once been. They're starved for fuel and ammunition, despite the ability to resupply by sea, although that was interdicted by Soviet forces all the time. On the 5th of May, the Soviets launched a diversionary attack from the north of the city. 2 days later, they began the full frontal, the real assault from the Sapun Heights east of Sevastopol. They recaptured the great city on 9th May, and the remaining Axis troops pulled back to the westernmost point of Crimea, Cape Kherson's. This was the same place where the Red Army had made their last stand in 1942 and evacuated troops to Odessa. The last evacuation of Axis forces happened on 12th May. Even so, the Red Army still captured 21,000 German and Romanian prisoners at Kherson's. This operation had cost the Red Army 85,000 casualties, 17,754 killed or missing, 67,065 wounded or sick. 171 tanks were destroyed, along with 521 guns and 179 aircraft. The Germans suffered more than the Soviets did for once. 96,700 casualties, including 31,700 Germans killed or missing and 25,800 Romanians, plus nearly 40,000 wounded or sick. After the battle, British journalist Alexander Worth flew in to view the scene. He wrote, "In the plains around Sapun Ridge and along the road that runs to Sevastopol through the Valley of Inkerman, the air was filled with the stench of death. It came from the hundreds of horses still lying there, inflated and decaying at the roadside, and from the thousands of dead, many of whom had not been buried deep enough, or even not buried at all. On the killing fields of Kherson's Peninsula, the ground was plowed up by thousands of shells and scorched by the fire of the Katyusha mortars. Hundreds of German vehicles were still there, or were being carted away by Russian soldiers. The ground was littered with thousands of German helmets, rifles, bayonets, and other arms and ammunition. Over the ground were also scattered thousands of pieces of paper, photographs, snapshots, passports, maps, private letters, even a volume of Nietzsche carried to the end by some Nazi superman." End quote. A week after their recapture of Crimea, the Soviet Union did exactly what you'd expect a liberator to do. they started deporting the civilian population. The NKVD, the People's Commissariat for Internal Affairs, that is, the predecessor of the KGB, began deporting 18,000 Crimean Tatars from the land they had lived in for centuries. These people were sent to Uzbekistan, where they were to stay for decades. Now, I'm recording this in mid-April 2025, and as far as the narrative goes, we've reached May 1944. At that point, the Wehrmacht had been cleared from almost all of Ukraine, from the Black Sea coast to the Pripet marshes on the edge of Poland. In the south, the Red Army had won back almost all Soviet territory and had entered foreign territory. In the north, the Leningrad Front had reached the Estonian border. At a cost in lives and destroyed equipment that would stagger people from the west, today or at any other time. It was clear that the Axis was losing. But it was not a spent force, not by any means. The Wehrmacht was still powerful, lethal, and there would be another year of death and destruction to come in the Second World War in the East, the West, in Italy, China, and in the Pacific. So much more to talk about. So much more to talk about. But that's all for this episode. Remember, hit that follow button so you don't miss the next one. Thank you for listening to Beyond Barbarossa, the podcast about the Eastern Front of the Second World War. As always, I've put maps on the webpage for this episode, and it really does help you understand where Odessa and all those other little towns are around it, as well as Crimea. Go to beyondbarbarossa.ca or beyondbarbarossa.podbean.com and click on the title for this episode. Don't forget to hit the follow button so that you don't miss a single episode. And for reminders in your email, sign up to track all your favorite podcasts at feedspot.com. If you have a minute, please give us a rating on whichever podcasting platform you use. And a review would not only make me feel good, it helps others find us if they haven't heard of this podcast before. You can get early and ad-free access to Beyond Barbarossa by supporting through Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/beyondbarbarossa and choose the level of support you want. I want to thank all Patreon supporters, including my latest, Bruce, VAT3TTM Brown, Sydney Tobias, and Claude Jansen. Do you have something to add or to say, a comment, a question, or, I hate to admit the possibility, a correction? I'd love to hear from you. Reach out to scott@beyondbarbarossa.ca or through the Facebook Beyond Barbarossa page. I'm also on Blue Sky and other social media. I'm easy to find, Scott the Writer or Scott Burry Author. Original music was composed and recorded by Nicholas Burry. I'm Scott Burry. And remember, Canada is and will continue to be a free, independent country. And we welcome visitors. Until next time, keep your paddles in the water. Slava Ukraina.